Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news from the week up to the 11th of November, 2019. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story, Kate, asks if a plea for shorter trading hours could smash the city high-octane and largely testosterone-fueled stereotype. In a 7th of November joint proposal paper sent to trading venues across Europe, including the London Stock Exchange, the Investment Association and Association for Financial Markets in Europe say, "We are convinced that the adoption of shorter market hours would not only improve market structure, but will have a significant positive impact on individual employees and indeed our industry's ability to attract a more diverse talent." They explain that our members tell us that the existing long hours culture has resulted in a number of substantial problems for both individual firms and the market as a whole. Anecdotal evidence from members is that trading remains one of the areas of financial services where staff face significant mental health issues. Although due to the historical stigma attached to such conditions, individuals are often very reticent to report such problems. Kate, are these proposals a way forward to improving overall diversity and culture in financial services?
Well, it's almost like we've got three campaigns going on here. We've got the campaign for inclusivity, a campaign for work-life balance, perhaps more flexible working, and of course a campaign for better well-being at work with improved mental health and not wanting work to create mental health problems. And what they're all saying in a way is there is a strong business case for these initiatives. So rather than almost being three separate moral crusades, we're at last getting to they make business sense. So it's not about being kind to carers or giving people time off. It's actually because you get better work from people, you get fewer days lost through absence, you get more diversity, which we know, of course, leads to better innovation, better representation of our customers. So all in favour of this, and anything that challenges a culture which is ultimately quite damaging for the individuals who are part of it has to be welcome.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at an article in Business Insider reporting that some employers, including Walmart, Toyota and Heineken, are making warehouse workers wear biometric harnesses that track their every movement while on the job. The devices were created by Brooklyn-based startup StrongArm and were primarily meant to improve the safety of workers moving heavy inventory by tracking data on workers who repeat unsafe movements, thus reducing claims from workplace injuries. However, Bloomberg reports that some companies are using the data collected by the devices to monitor workers' productivity, improve efficiency, and even plan how to replace workers with automation. StrongArm devices have been used by 15,000 workers, according to the company, which is aiming for 35,000 daily average users by the end of next year. But workers have raised concerns. Adam Kaczynski, a labour union representative in Massachusetts, told Bloomberg he was unnerved when a General Electric factory he worked at began instructing workers to wear the devices. "I tried to convince everyone not to do it," said Kaczynski. "They have no business knowing that information." Kate, how should leaders respond when promised improvements in efficiency are linked to monitoring and recording all the movements of their workforce?
Isn't this a great example of the double-edged sword that technology is, and how often something that seems to be done for the right reasons, or for, as in this case, to help people lift more safely, to be able to identify the workers who are at risk from unsafe lifting practices, then someone else says, "Oh, we could use this to see how productive people are, to actually monitor them." But ultimately, it's the environment of trust in which these devices are being used. and a good and fair employer where there are high levels of trust, genuinely high levels of regard for employee welfare, will use these well. And I think the other thing is that we all forget is how when things first come out, they do seem really creepy, and then they start being much more useful. If we take the smartphones, the idea your phone can pinpoint where you are at any time actually has really great uses. But in many cases, people perhaps don't want that information shared. So it's very much about how employers, I think, manage the communication about this and reassure people that they are doing it for the right things. And if they are being used abusively or to gain intelligence that's used to the employee's detriment, then that's a legitimate challenge from trade unions and employee groups.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story asks, why do employees feel the need to go to work when they are sick? A recent survey of 2,000 Americans reported by Ben Renner found that more than 3/4 of respondents ignore their better judgment and go to work even when they are sick, putting their co-workers at risk for catching whatever it is they have. The survey, in which nearly all of the 1,930 respondents were employed, was commissioned by the cold medication company Robitussin and conducted by OnePoll. One common reason for going to work with a cold or other ailment is stress. The survey showed that 42% of workers feel stressed out when they attempt to call out sick, even though 41% of those surveyed said they would rather cover for their colleagues and take on extra work temporarily than work with a sick fellow employee. Mental health experts suggest that days spent out of work often leave American workers feeling like they're falling behind on their housework and bills, causing still more anxiety and leading many people to try to avoid coughs and colds at all costs. Kate, what support should organisations offer to persuade people who are sick to stay at home?
Trying to avoid coughs and colds at all costs is probably sound advice. And anything that makes us healthier rather than less healthy is to be encouraged. I think we all have different levels of irritation, I suppose, with people who drag themselves into work when they're obviously not well enough to be there. And if you add to that spreading germs and infection, then the argument should be absolutely stay at home. But surely in this day and age, staying out of the office shouldn't mean you're not working, obviously depending on the industry that you're working in. I was pleased to see here that 41% of those surveyed said they wouldn't mind covering for a sick colleague. I think we have to remember that is only sustainable if it's reciprocal. And if the same people are able keep taking time off and don't sort of pay back when other people are off, that could give rise to another problem. But ultimately, it's why are people scared to take time off work if they're not well? What are they losing as a result of this? And where, again, going back to culture like the previous piece, what are the implicit messages that they're being given by management, by senior teams, that there's an expectation that they should turn up to work even if they're not fit to do so? And I think that's where the real challenge should come from.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story suggests that small gestures of kindness have a big impact on employee health, who actually says that the health and well-being of employees make an essential contribution to business success. So, Kate, just to finish off this podcast, what sort of gestures of kindness do you think would have a big impact on employee health?
If we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that most of our listeners will be familiar with. As we go up the hierarchy, we become more and more requiring, if you like, of our social self being nurtured. And any act of kindness which acknowledges you as a colleague, as a fellow human, as somebody with a life out of work, is obviously, as this suggests, disproportionately welcomed. One of the ways it's institutionalized in organizations, of course, is through birthdays or people sending postcards. But I think things like office heaters, if somebody's coming in and they are cold, make sure they're in a warm place. Bring them a hot drink. There are so many ways we can just show that we're human and kind and treat our co-workers as we would our friends and family. And remember that they will then pay that back. And I think the impact of somebody being kind to you, especially when you're feeling at a low ebb, is so easy. And as we often talk about, there's no budget for kindness. We don't run out of it. We don't have a year end. We can be kind every day.
And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your kindness and insights on these stories.
Okay, thank you, Rod.